So that started along 3 years ago. My idea, when I got started, my idea was to experiment with myself, seeing how far can I go, what can happen when a student, I was a student at that point, decides to take blogs seriously and to let the ideas go out on the weblog and connect with other scholars who are also blogging. There were not many at that time, it has grown since. And I ended up switching fields and doing my thesis on that effort that I did. And I have much more to say. When I was finished, I got hired by the NRC to continue. Basically, I'm continuing research on these kinds of things. I have two blogs. If you want to look them up, you just have to go to seb.notlong.com. That's my English language blog, my personal blog. And the other blog I contribute to is Many to Many. It's a weblog on social software. So it covers blogging, but other forms like wikis and link social bookmarking systems, social networking systems, and stuff like that. So I invite you to check it out. That's it.
All right. As one of the two very, very well-known panel, my name is Brian Alexander. I'm a former English professor. I taught 18th century studies and Gothic horror. I moved to the National Institute for Technology and Liberal Education, where I helped run the Center for Educational Technology in Middlebury, Vermont, the other end of North America from where we are today. My background very quickly, in 2000, as an experiment, I had my students in a British novel seminar use blogs for their classwork. I wanted a quick, light, fast way to get them using the web publication and to hyperlink with each other. And for political reasons, I resisted the Blackboard implementation on campus. This was immensely successful. The students loved it. It was just a dynamic way to teach, and I've been struck with it ever since. At the Center for Educational Technology, I worked on a few issues, including social software, copyright, which has a connection with Gothic terror in many ways, intercampus collaborative classes. Now that's a form that we've worked on where it's a form of blended learning, where two or more classes teach the same subject on multiple campuses. So I taught twice a class on the American experience in Vietnam. My class was an English class in Louisiana. I had a friend in Florida teaching political science, and a friend in Richmond, Virginia, who was teaching history. We had the same syllabus. Each of us met in the classroom with chalk and blackboards. And online, we met using multiple tools, from peer-to-peer technology to web publications to simulations, to build a kind of meta class. So we complement our abilities. So I can speak more about that if you'd like, but that's one field that I've been developing since. I work in gaming, on wireless and mobile technology, new narrative forms, and along the cultural studies line, I've been publishing on what I consider the uncanny internet, the way that people project fears, anxieties, and terror onto the internet, which is a lot of fun looking at. I run a few blogs. If you Google InfoCult, that's where I research my peculiar interests. I run two blogs for Nightly, and I'm also one of the team at smartmobs.com.
Yeah, before we start, if somebody could give me the sheet of paper with the wireless login and password. I'm sitting here. Oh, there we go. Great, thanks. And I'll do that after I introduce myself. My name is Stephen Downs. Some of you may have seen me a few minutes ago. Being a heretic, I've been involved in the field of online learning for more than 10 years. Probably closer to 12 years. My background is in MUDs. If you don't know what those are multi-user online games. And we immediately changed the name from multi-user dungeons, which didn't go over well in an academic environment, to multi-user domains, which did. And so my history is of using various internet technologies to support learning online. In fact, I created a bulletin board system back in the late 80s or early 90s called Athabasca BBS. One thing I never did do is be a regular on Usenet. which separates me from the majority of academics. I've always been more involved in experiential, interactive environments rather than discussion boards or email lists or things like that. I've been blogging properly so-called since 1998, less properly so-called since 1995, but it wasn't really blogging then, didn't really know what it was. My main website is Stephen's Web. It's at downs.ca, and you can type the W's if you want as well. I have another very unpopular website called News Trolls. News Trolls, as I said in the other session or somewhere, is probably the oldest member of the long tail, since it was one of the very first blogs that went up, and it never did become popular, which is fine. And if you go to News Trolls, let me give you a language and content warning now, because it tends to be fairly vociferous. My expertise in learning is not blogs per se, although I have written about the subject. My expertise in learning is learning resources, networks of learning resources, using metadata to describe networks of learning resources, resource repositories, and content syndication. And consequently, one of my first major interactions between blogging and online learning was to propose the use of RSS to locate and distribute learning resources, and that was in a paper called Content Syndication in Online Learning. I work with SEB, with the National Research Council in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, on the other coast, the snowy coast. And like SEB, I am a researcher there. I've been with the NRC for a little more than 3 years. And that's me.
Well, I offered to give just kind of a very simple template to possibly lead us into discussion, or at least identify general areas for discussion. It's up there, but not here. Okay, well, that's interesting. It's really just to identify that there are three, generally speaking, three sort of application areas for weblogs in academia. One is as personal research platforms, which is where I started.
Is this large enough? Do people see what's written there?
See it from here.
Yeah. How can I get it up here?
What are you on, Windows or Apple? I have no idea.
Sorry. Is someone calling Hilton?
Oh. She wants it on her screen. Somebody figure out how to get it on her screen, too. It's a weird, bizarre Apple system.
Okay. Can you keep talking?
Yeah, so it's a very simple template, folks. It's weblogs can be used by faculty instructors as research platforms for their own research, for course development, for developing kind of broader knowledge networks, for more experimental forms of in-process publishing or iterative authoring, that is to say, kind of developing using a web as a weblog as a platform for developing larger research projects. Second general area is in teaching. And very simply, practice is oriented towards instructors, faculty using, sort of augmenting their presentational platforms with the use of weblogs, often with commenting added on, and a more,
that's a lot easier when you see the screen.
Yes, it is a lot easier when you see the screen. A more extreme approach. It's a little slow here.
Yeah, it is. Who's downloading music?
Of using student weblogs. That's an area that Brian indicated he has some experience in. and we can talk about what the point is. I really am just laying out these areas. And then a third area, which isn't often touched on, but I have some experience with, is using weblogs within the academy as sort of enterprise social software. That is to say, as a space for curriculum development, for program planning, for shared work on visioning the direction of a program, and also for managing administrative tasks and administrative information management at that level, and then extending from there into communication outside. I guess actually within all three of the areas, part of the difficulty and opportunity of weblogs in education, as I think Seb was saying, is the opening up of, you know, sort of the ivory tower, the walls of the academy, that with the use of weblogs, sort of augmenting email, but weblogs in a more public form, kind of perforating the academy, opening it up to the wider world. So those are three general areas that we could discuss further. Pick up other points, and do we want to start with questions at this point, or Cyprian, did you have?
No, not yet.
So one of the things that came up this morning is how risky is it to explore in your roles within higher ed? I'm just kind of curious to know, Seb, for example, was, do you have an idea of, are you being fully supported by your institution, or is it something that you're doing in your own spare time?
Yeah, in my case, blogging has had many more positives than negatives. I've blogged in two different contexts. The first was as a graduate student, and the other one, I don't speak loud enough, I'm sorry. Okay, so I've had the opportunity to blog academically in two different contexts. The first was as a completely unknown graduate student at some university. I was at Université de Montréal. And now what I'm doing is as a research officer at the National Research Council of Canada. Now, the way blogging has been useful to me back when I was a student was, first of all, I had ideas that I wanted to bounce off others, but I couldn't find who these others were at that point. And I didn't find them within my own institution. Within my department, people were all off to other different things. I was in the computer science department, and the ideas I had were more along the ideas of networking, using scholarly communication, studying scholarly communication per se, which wasn't a topic of interest at that department. So by blogging, I just started putting it out there, and what happened is I started getting readers and links to my writing, and I thanks to refer tracking, that's a technical detail that lets you see who's linking to you. I was able to discover collaborators. I was able to build a network without having published anything that was that had gone through the normal peer reviewing process. I was able to embed myself in the creative network of researchers and people outside academia who were thinking along similar lines as I was. These people were scattered across the world, and it was really obvious that we'd meet at some point, but it eventually happened. Like, started having conferences about blogging, just like we are right now. There were blog talk conferences in Vienna. And blogging was one of my key research interests. So I eventually met these people with whom I had already began thinking of them as collaborators, colleagues, way before I even got the chance to meet them. So I guess that's the key thing that I got out of blogging as a student. So it enabled me to pick a topic that I really cared about and develop it and let the network form itself around me. If you want to take a self-centered way, you can see it as that. Or otherwise, you find your place in the network based on what you care about. And just by crossing your fingers and hoping that the readers clicking on links like mad. That's what they do. Well, they click links and they read, and they find you. I know it because I'm a reader myself. So I discovered people. I discovered Stephen. I discovered Laura, Brian. By exploring that way, and it goes both ways, and eventually it gels into something coherent. As long as what you're doing is not like. I realize that it's very good that I was thinking about weblogs and the impact of the web on scholarship. That meant that many of the people who cared about that were already in that space, that blogging space. It's obviously harder if you care about a topic that is rather obscure and where people are less likely to be already in that space. There's already someone. Kara?
Yeah. What were your reactions of you?
You don't get it as long as you speak.
What were the reactions of the people inside your department?
Mostly there was no reaction. And I considered that as a good thing.
I can say a few things to that. Can everyone hear me? The wonderful staff just gave me some doses of medicine for head pain, and I don't know what it was, so if any moment I start hallucinating, please enjoy. It was okay. Well, we'll see. I had a similar experience in that most of my colleagues had no idea what I was talking about. When I said blog in 2000, they thought I had an outbreak of Tourette's syndrome. One advantage I had was that I could say, okay, I went to blogger.com very easily, and I'll say a word about that in a minute. We could run down to a lab, and any student, and these weren't engineers, these were just any random undergrad, could in 5 minutes have a blog with a unique URL. So it could be Laura's British Literature Journal page.blogspot.com. Then we could leave the computer lab and go back to the classroom. And that was a huge selling point for my colleagues, because they were terrified in English and other humanities of the computer classroom. And because the technological demands are so low, I could say in class, okay, next week, please write a link to a resource about Dickens and the social novel, and then pick an argument with one of your classmates and explain why they're wrong or why they're right. So that was an advantage. A downside, do you all know course management tools like Blackboard or OCP? Does anyone not know what those are? That reaction is, I like that, I agree. Yes. These are immensely, immensely popular in the United States, I think in Canada as well. Given one, Blackboard is the other one. And Blackboard, they like to show up at conferences all wearing black shirts with Blackboard on them. I'll keep my assessment of that to a minimum. But the problem with this, there are a lot of problems pedagogically, but if you select away from that and pick blogging as a tool, you run the risk of flying afoul with some sense of campus mission. So if the campus invests some psychological heft in Blackboard or WebCT or Angel, my first class, there's a financial import, but partly it's perceptual, because these are actually fairly cheap compared to, say, Banner or something. A downside of this is I was using Blogger, which is hosted. I think you all know Blogger. If you don't, it's a great first step in blogging. But it was hosted off-site. So this had several problems. One was that this made me and my students dependent on a perfect connection. And that isn't always the case in small colleges. Second, there was a branding issue in that the name of every student's blog did not have the college name in it. And while this might sound bizarre or political, this is a major issue for some people. So what way to get around that is to host a blog. But then you tell the IT department, either I'm going to volunteer to host a blog, which means they try to kill you, setting up some kind of rogue thing, or you say, hi, would you please have a blog? It's really easy. Then they shoot you, because they have their time and their reward. And so that's a problem. That's an issue. One solution is to have some kind of collaborative offsite hosting. But those are a couple of responses.
I'm sure my question here will be,
I guess I would say that my Sorry? The question is about a practical issue about how much information can be conveyed through a text-based medium. Is that
I think the limitations. Of the human mind in terms of digital life and the
Right. No, I don't think those are. I think that's an elemental question that's deeply important. The first thought that comes to my mind is in my experience teaching, starting before I went to weblogs, I was teaching history and theory courses in using a discussion board system. We used a couple of different ones. And I found that the level of discussion that you were able to have with students and able to encourage them to have with one another, and therefore the kind of ownership over the development of the ideas going to the students, was way beyond anything that you could have face-to-face, because it allows for reflection, both on what other students have said and then on what they're saying. Plus, there's a development of writing skills that happens in a way that I think is going to serve students in exactly this way, going into an increasingly sort of digitized culture. It's less and less important. It's still important that they learn kind of proper essay form, but learning how to quickly engage through the textual interface, think on their feet in collaboration with others, is increasingly at a premium in order to be contributors to the culture. So I think that it's partly a question of what exactly when and where they're used. You need to get a good match of what the learning goals are and then what the platform is. But also, in a general way, I think it's increasingly important to incorporate these skills into the curriculum so that our students have the skills that they need when they get out.
Yeah, I just want to add to that very briefly and compare online learning with what it's being stacked up against, because yeah, it's true. I mean, some students are really awful typers. I was a really awful typer, and the tools are awful. It's most learning environments right now are really horrible to work in, and you'd much rather be in a classroom because this is great, right? We can do this. We can argue back and forth, but this isn't. A session like this isn't what online learning is competing with. On the one hand, you have, for many people, online learning or nothing. And what online learning does is it gives you access. Sure, you can only type 35 words a minute, which means it's going to be slow, but 35 words a minute is a whole lot faster than not being